go ahead and crank this thing up. What is happening? Welcome in. Very happy to be with you guys until 1 o'clock on this beautiful fall thirsty Thursday. So much to get into. A lot of great guests on the horizon. 11:15, Titans outside linebacker Harold Landry is going to be here. 12:20, one of my favorites, and I think a newcomer to the Nashville radio airwaves, Rick Venturi, who is the Colts version of Coach Mack. He's a delight. I know that you're probably biased in favor of our boy, Dave McGinnis, but you're really going to enjoy Coach Venturi's insights and analysis as we break down the Titans and the Colts, so stick around for that as well. If you guys want to get involved, you are more than welcome to do so. The number is simple. 615-737-1045. 615-737-1045. A lot of great stuff. Basically, the whole show is Titans and Colts today because we've got great insights and analysis, film breakdowns, good perspective from everybody who's going to be involved or a lot of the parties who are going to be involved. You're going to hear from Ryan Tannehill here in just a minute and Jeffrey Simmons as well because I thought, upon further review of the Seahawks game, I thought that it was one of the best performances that I've seen out of Jeffrey Simmons. And I will expand on that once we get to the 11 o'clock hour. In the meantime, I want to start here because this is the thing that has been driving the majority of conversation in the football void, right? We'll have Thursday Night Football tonight. We'll talk about Carolina and Houston a little bit at the end of the show before we get out of here. But in between, in the days between Monday Night Football or in the hours between Monday Night Football and Thursday Night Football, what fills the void? Well, this week, it's the fact that it's Oilers homecoming week. It's the fact that Bum Phillips will be honored at Nissan Stadium. He will go into the Titans Ring of Honor, take his rightful place among some of the greatest, the best and the brightest in the history of the Houston Oilers and Tennessee Titans franchise, because they are one and the same, for those who would forget. J.J. Watt, you know, the city of Houston and its fan base, or at least those of the loud majority or minority in Houston who would decry that Nashville has stolen their football culture, and a small, weird segment of the media contingent that is causing a fuss among Titans fans for no particular reason other than to shout into the void about who actually the history of the Houston Oilers belongs to, whether it's the Tennessee Titans and the Adams family, Amy Adams Strunk and her siblings, the departed Bud Adams, given that that's where the Tennessee Titans started, or the city of Houston, where they belong in some museum for nobody to look at other than, you know, those who would try and draw some kind of connection between the Texans and the Houston Oilers, when in fact none exists other than the fact that they both played at points in that city. So I'm scrolling through my Twitter timeline last night, and I see this dude, I don't know if it's Paul Gallant or Paul Gallant, screaming on the internet about this Oilers tribute week, because the Titans have changed their profile picture. It's not the flaming thumbtack. It's the oil derrick. It's the oil rig. It's the famous love you blue color scheme with the light red, the baby blue, the white. It looks great. It's one of the best color schemes and best uniforms in all of, I mean, I would argue sports history. Like, this is one of the best and brightest. So of course you would want to use this if you're the Titans as a part of your marketing campaign. One, because you own it and it's your right to, but two, because it's aesthetically pleasing and it attracts people to it. So I see that they've changed all of their stuff. They put out wallpaper Wednesday yesterday on the Titans Twitter account. And so this guy named Paul Gallant quote tweets it and is screaming, apparently, at anybody who is willing to listen to him, quote, "You are thieves."
He's very upset.
"Piss off and give Houston back its football history." Now, this man has a blue check mark. He is allegedly not anywhere. There is no relation to the city of Houston. He's a Boston sports fan that does a podcast in Seattle. So I'm not quite sure how to connect the love triangle there for why Paul is so just righteously outraged.
Beside himself.
Beside himself. Torn up. Tough scene. Why this man is so beside himself as to shout at the team's official Twitter account like a fly around an elephant's tail, basically. You are thieves. Damn you. Piss off and give Houston back. It's football history. Then it goes on. I'll read the whole thread because this, I mean, this cracked me up yesterday just watching this dude shout at nobody in particular about a uniform. The thing that you have the least, that there are the least amount of grounds to be outraged about. It's just a uniform. It's just a color scheme. But somehow people turn it into an all-out war on the internet. He goes on to say the ball's on these people, believing anyone in Tennessee actually respects the Houston Oilers' history. These throwbacks don't belong to you. And I add parenthetically that no, in fact, they do actually belong to the Tennessee Titans franchise and to the owners of the Tennessee Titans franchise, the Adams family. Like, there's a whole trademark licensing situation that you're completely ignoring in this particular regard. He goes on, I'm legitimately angry about this. Whoa, no bleep, bud. We couldn't tell. Wow, he says. I see Tennessee Hill folk have taken time from their squirrel sandwiches and figured out how to internet. Congrats on your unis. When your state has been football irrelevant for 20-plus years, you got to take the small victories when you can. Hashtag Titoons. And then he adds, you know, it's a whole thread. There's a thread of Kevin Dyson outstretched for the end zone. There's a thread of Jake Locker holding up his Titans uniform. There's a thread of Marcus Mariota holding up his Titans uniform. So he's just trying to get the entire fan base in a tizzy, and it worked. But what I do not understand is why this is a point of a point of discussion every year. Why can we just not accept the simple fact, or why can the rest of the world, the sports world, not accept the simple fact that in fact these do by legal standard, by licensing standard, by merchandising standard, this thing belongs to the franchise, not the Titans, not the Oilers, but the franchise. It belongs to the franchise and the people that own the franchise. Why are we still arguing about this? Every year it feels like J.J. Watt's got an Instagram post, or when he was with the Texans, of him in a throwback Oilers uniform, and then the entirety of the internet is set aflame. Will Hodges on YouTube, where you can interact with the show on Zone TV, says, I think someone is upset that the Titans beat the Seahawks. But yeah, he's a Patriots. He's like a Patriots fan. That's what I don't get.
The worst type of person.
Why? What do you mean?
A Patriots fan who covers the Seahawks just staunchly, passionately defending Houston for whatever reason.
But like,
he's got his toe in too many pools.
Buddy, I don't even think he covers the Seahawks. Like, it's just, there is nothing to indicate that he is somebody who covers Seattle sports other than there's a picture on his timeline of one of those split, like, Peyton Manning, Broncos, Colts uniforms. It's a, you know what I'm talking about? The worst kind of people that wear those things.
Yeah.
There's one picture of that on his timeline, and that is the only indication that he has any tangential connection to Seattle sports.
He's the guy who grew up loving Patriots and Alabama football, plus Kentucky basketball and Laker basketball.
He's just clearly perpetually unhappy. There's nothing you can do about those people other than to point at them and to laugh at them. So that's what we'll do. 615-737-1045 is the number. Freeman on YouTube says, are you guys getting to week 2 2019 vibes? That day felt like doomsday, and I never really got to vent about my frustrations that afternoon. So it is Colts week, right? It is another situation at a home game where a franchise legend is going to be honored, when there is going to be an audience of people associated with that franchise. It's funny to me that Oliver Luck, who was a quarterback of the Houston Oilers, is coming as a guest of the Tennessee Titans to watch the Titans play his son's former team. I don't know why that's funny to me, but it's funny to me. So the doomsday.
There needs to not be a Luck in the building in Nissan Stadium on Sunday.
615-737-1045 is how you get involved. Does this week give you doomsday vibes? Because what Freeman is referencing there is interesting. And what Lucas is connecting the dots to is, yeah, there's some bad juju whenever it comes to the Titans playing the Colts. Now, this has zero connection zero grounding in actual analysis and real life situations. Like the 2019 honoring of Eddie George and Steve McNair, and the last time they did a Titans homecoming when the field caught a flame, and now the rest of the league is banned from using pyrotechnics because of how poorly that went. And the Titans ended up losing that game, if I recall correctly, to Jacoby Brissett.
Yes.
And so that was another game where it was setting up for an exciting season. It's Mike Vrabel's second year at the helm. They look like they've got, you know, this is the year where we find out about Marcus Mariota, and we ended up finding out very quickly about Marcus Mariota. Does this week three have the same kind of feel to you that week two did? The franchise, the team, the Titans, are in a much different place and headspace than they were 2 years ago. There is no question about it. But there is this kind of boogeyman vibe to the Colts that it seems that some people just can't get past. When Lucas says there just doesn't need to be a luck in the building, it's funny, it's a great line, it's a great joke, but also there's somebody listening to their radio or hanging out with us on the podcast or streaming this through the Zone app that is sitting there nodding their head vigorously at what Lucas just said, because, you know, the spawn of Oliver Luck holds an 11-0 record against the Tennessee Titans, retired undefeated against them, and of course doing that damage with the Indianapolis Colts. We will, let's go to Bill in Spring Hill, who wants to weigh in about the Colts game, because we're going to spend a lot of time on the X's and O's part of this here in just a second, but I do think that the storylines, the narratives of this matchup are interesting. What's up, Bill? What you got?
Oh, man, I just wanted to kind of touch base on the way the Titans performed in the fourth quarter.
Sure.
They rock and roll, man. They got their wideouts involved. They was doing the short passes. They were getting the game run going, and the King started running, baby. We need to get that going all four quarters. I think we've got a daggum good team this year.
Sure.
We've just got to produce in four quarters instead of one quarter. And they relied once again on their kicker to win the game for them. Praise that kicker, man. He done a good job. He got out there under some heavy stress. Bam, put it through the goals, won it in overtime. We're going to kick the Colts' butts. I'm going to say we're going to beat the Colts at least 27-10. That's what I'm saying. I'm going to sit back and listen to you guys. Let's get a full game going with the Titans, baby. Go Titans.
Oh, we love to see it. Rack 'em. Thank you for the call, Bill. That's some good energy on a Thursday.
Confidence.
So let's dive into that a little deeper, right? Because all indications are that the Titans are a substantially better team. The Colts will likely be without their starting quarterback. They are spiraling at 0-2. This is the ability. You have the ability to not just put them in the grave, but to have them dig it themselves in week three. Think about that for a second. So we'll take a look at this, and I'll tell you, coming up next, I'll tell you what the most impressive part of the Titans' comeback win at Seattle was. What Bill just touched on there, that fourth quarter and into overtime, I'll tell you what the most impressive part of that was and how the Titans, how there's room to improve upon what it is that they did in an incredible win at Seattle. That's coming up next. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back. A lot of good stuff to get into today. Don't forget, Harold Landry, Titans outside linebacker, going to join the show at 11:15. Harold's been sneaky great through the first two games. I know nobody likes to say that they're thinking about a contract when they're in a contract year, but my guy's certainly performing like it, so we'll catch up with Harold. Got some questions for him at 11:15. Coach Rick Venturi of the Colts Radio Network, one of my favorites and one I'm excited to share with the Nashville audience. You're going to love him too, even though he calls the games for one of your most hated rivals in the NFL. Coach Venturi is a thoroughly enjoyable character. He is of the Coach Mac, Coach Dave McGinnis mold. So we look forward to catching up with Coach Venturi at 12:20. We actually did put it on a poll, given that it is Colts week, and that, to me, speaks to a greater hatred among Titans fans than almost any other team. Now, that's not necessarily because it's a rivalry, because the numbers, the win and loss margin would indicate that it hasn't been much of one. More so in the last couple of years, and you do own a sweep over them in the last, what, 4 or 5 years? But for a long time, the Colts have had your number. So the hatred is there, but the rivalry is not necessarily it, even though you've been in the same division for quite some time at this point between the AFC Central and then the AFC South. The Jags come up in this conversation as well. That's a rivalry that you enjoy greatly because you have the Jags number, but also because there have been historically fun games and AFC Championship games and things of that nature. And then there's the Ravens, who, of course, have that Ray Lewis, Eddie George dynamic and also has found new life and new history with the way that those games have gone. The Titans have done well against the Ravens. And then the way that the Ravens knocked the Titans off in the playoffs this past January kind of breathes new life into that. So that's a pretty interesting dynamic, and I wonder how Titans fans feel about that. Well, we'll see what the results of the poll are. Lucas, you said you were particularly interested in the results of the poll today. Why?
Yeah, because I think it's indicative of different Titans generations. There's a lot of Titans fans that hate the Steelers more than anybody because of some of those battles in the division and the, you know, back in the day, the early 2000s, late 1990s. And the Jags, there were a couple of AFC championship battles with them. And obviously, it's a division opponent now. So, I don't know. The Ravens, too, it's cool to see how that's been sort of revived over the last few years. Titans winning the playoffs at their place. Ravens winning the playoffs at the Titans' place. You wonder if there will be like a rubber match of sorts coming up in 2021.
What is a rubber match?
Best of three game.
Oh, okay. I did not.
Baseball
I,
term.
I didn't know if that was something that. So why are you using it about football?
I just one of those things. I don't know.
Cup of coffee. This is something that comes up as well.
Yeah, you do this too. This is a little inside baseball. I don't know how often you say that.
I'm gonna fight you. It's a good point. That's a fine. I did notice myself saying that a lot in the last couple of weeks. Okay, it's good. I'll pay a dollar to Home Street Home. You can do so as well at 1045thezone.com/BuckRising, where we, anytime that I say something, anytime that I use a crutch phrase, Lucas fines me. We need like a sound to indicate that I'm being fined. Like we have with Liam Neeson or Stephen A. Smith.
Like a cash register sound?
Yeah, or just, yeah, a cash register? That's a tough one. Cash register sound would be good. That would be a great way to signify that I owe a dollar to Home Street Home. Anyway, let's not get too distracted. And let's focus in on this game, this rubber match of sorts, as Lucas said, that is coming up on Sunday. The Titans, in that fourth quarter and into overtime, really in the second half when Derrick Henry found the end zone the first time, not the 60-yard touchdown run, but I believe the first one was a 9-yard touchdown run in the third quarter that kind of kept the Titans, you know, kept the Titans on basically on the dialysis machine when the heartbeat seemed to be fading. Yes, it was a 9-yard touchdown run with 10:37 left to go in the third quarter. That was followed by a Freddie Swain, don't call him Jeff Swaim, 68-yard touchdown on the coverage bust that got Bradley McDougal cut. And then the 60-yard response by the Titans and Derrick Henry. So, the run game is where I want to start, because the analysis of that win was, wow, look at the way that the Titans respond, and rightfully so. They responded well. They found ways to execute. They got their playmakers involved, whether it was Julio Jones keeping them alive, whether it was A.J. Brown not contributing the way that you would like him to, but also having critical blocks in the running game. Which is what we used to say about Corey Davis. So let's not spiral out of control with that, because I know that Titans fans hated when you would cite Corey Davis' impact in the running game, but it's true. And it's true of all of their receivers. But then the way that they found their composure, the quarterback operating in an incredibly hostile environment, it was a very impressive top-to-bottom second-half performance by Tennessee. The defense only allowing 7 points in the second half. There's a lot of different things to be said about the way that they found to fight back in that game and to keep themselves alive. So the question that I have for the audience, 615-737-1045 is how you weigh in. What was the most impressive part of the offensive performance that got them back into that game against Seattle? Ryan Tannehill had one of, I mean, even though he did not throw a touchdown pass, Ryan Tannehill's performance was as good as any as I have seen from him in his now going into 3 years as the starting quarterback. He was exceptional on a great many ways. And he should have had a touchdown pass to Julio, but, you know, we've litigated that ad nauseum. With the performance, though, you look at Derrick Henry, the numbers are staggering. It's a career high for carries for Derrick, 35. You look at Julio Jones and the way that he was able to rebound off a shoddy start. You look at the impact of the running backs in the passing game, not just Derrick, but McNichols, to keep them alive on third downs. The utilization of the check down, while that used to drive you crazy when it was Marcus Mariota, if there is nothing, you literally take what the defense gives you, and what they were giving you was the options to the running back late in that game. It was something that they used quite well. You have the defensive performance, of course, and that's a larger conversation. But what was the most important or the most impressive part of that offensive performance to you? 615-737-1045. Because the numbers and the scoring and the highlight shows, be it SportsCenter or Good Morning Football with the angry runs, it would all indicate Derrick Henry. And I would say that Derrick Henry is the correct answer, at least from my standpoint, upon further review. For as much as I thought of Tannehill, and I thought he was great, I really did. I thought he was above great. I thought he was spectacular in that moment, both as somebody who, both operationally and executionally. But Derrick is the one who is receiving the most focus and will receive the most focus because he's what makes the Titans offense go, right? So on yesterday's episode of The Install with Greg Cosell and myself, and if you want to weigh in, 615-737-1045 is the number. Greg and I went through, you know, what got them down against Seattle, what brought them back in separate pieces, and then we looked forward to the Colts, and we looked forward to a couple of other games that are big on this weekend slate between the 49ers and the Packers, the Rams and the Buccaneers, but we can save that for another day. In fact, we don't need to save that for another day. You can just go listen to the install after the radio show concludes. But I wanted Greg to explain to people what I think I was seeing from the running game as a whole, not just Derrick, from the run blocking out of base personnel, from the backup offensive linemen, Sam Brailo and Aaron Brewer, because Aaron Brewer all but played the entirety of the second half. What I wanted Greg to explain was whether Derrick Henry's runs were good execution by the Titans in base personnel, or whether it was just a running back, a game-changing player, helping to put them on his back and making that look a hell of a lot better than I thought it looked on film. And this is Greg Cosell on yesterday's episode of The Install.
Well, I'm going to tell you something that I think might be a surprise to people, but I think their run game was really not that good, okay?
Okay.
I think it still needs to be much better, okay? Because Henry had the 60-yard run, okay? And that came on a zone counter strong concept. And he made the unblocked corner. Flowers missed in space, which he'll do. A lot of corners don't really want to tackle him. And then the speed, he ran away from the safety. But I thought that Henry ended up with big numbers as a result of that run. But I thought overall the Titans' base personnel run game still needs work. Now, don't forget the O-line's dealing with injuries, but I thought they struggled at the point of attack much of the game. Look, big runs count, okay? We know that. But all I'm saying is you take away that run, and it counts, and he averaged less than 4 yards to carry. And I did not feel that they consistently moved people and won at the point. I thought Henry ran really well and gained, as he always does, gaining yards after contact. But my guess is that the coaching staff, you know, when they got on the plane and when they got back, you know, while they're drinking their scotch, they're talking about the fact that we still need to be better in the run game.
So I want people to focus on not Greg, because here's the difference between Cosell and everybody else. All right. Here's the difference between Cosell and people like me. Between Cosell and people like, you know, Ramon Foster. Well, I mean, Ramon's a different entity entirely because he played in the league. But the difference between Cosell as a media entity and me as a media entity is what Greg is saying there is an opinion. It's fact. That's film analysis. That's a distilled version of what the tape is telling him and what the tape is telling the coaches. That's why Greg is such an asset, because what he is giving you is not an opinion. It's legitimately what happened in that game. Don't look at that as that being as taking away from Derrick Henry. It's not anything that takes away from Derrick Henry, because I still believe what Derrick did, despite the fact that they weren't getting the kind of push that the numbers might indicate that they were, I think that speaks even more to what Derrick Henry does. There's two ways to look at this. One is that the Titans' running game isn't good enough yet, even though Derrick had a fantastic day. That's not taking away from Derrick. That's taking away from the schematics, from the execution, from the personnel, not just the running back. But it's also to say that there is room for improvement. You had 212 rushing yards, Derrick's three touchdowns on 40 total attempts. Tannehill ran four times. McNichols had one carry for 3 yards. All right, so it's mostly Derrick. But 212 yards, that's a great day from a run-first team, especially when you factor in the fact that Tannehill had almost 400 yards of offense himself. Look at that and say, all right, when you're looking at Derrick Henry, his ability is what makes him special. His ability to break into your secondary and pull away from players it doesn't make any sense that Derrick's faster than all of the players in the secondary at his size and at his strength with his abilities, but he does. His ability allows him to be the kind of player that we talk about the next day and is currently building, in the process of building, a Hall of Fame resume. He's a special, unique athlete. But the scheme needs to be better, and that's what Cosell is pointing out. That's what makes Derrick Henry the most impressive part of what they did on Sunday, because it wasn't just that Derrick had the kind of day that he did. It's the fact that he had the kind of day that he did without the help that the numbers might indicate that he had. 615-737-1045. I wonder if that surprises people to hear. Because, you know, Greg is studying offensive and defensive line matchups in that game, and we'll spend some time on Jeffrey Simmons versus Quentin Nelson later in the show, because Greg and I spent a great deal of time on that, and I think that's one of the most interesting matchups to focus on between the Titans and the Colts on Sunday, especially given what Aaron Donald did to the Colts this past Sunday. But I want to know, what was the most impressive part of that comeback against Seattle to you? Because to me, it was Derrick Henry, especially when you add the context of how maybe not necessarily overwhelming the running game was as a total package. 615-737-1045. Let's go to Bart in Nashville, who wants to weigh in about the quarterback. What's up, Bart? Bart, you got me?
Yes. Can you hear me okay, Buck?
I sure can, buddy. Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, man. I just got in on part of what you were saying, but I believe I'd like to relate it like this. The fourth quarter of it, obviously, was a beautiful thing, and I love the way that Tannehill was able to mix in the passing game as a complement to what happened, you know, to allow Derrick Henry to spring his home runs, his two home run runs and touchdowns.
Of course.
And I just like to, I'm kind of nervous, but I'd like to say that it just reminded me of a really good complimentary baseball game, where you have hitters coming up getting timely hits, and all of a sudden, man, somebody comes in two times at night and knocks a doggone home run, and you're like, wow. And I was just wowed by that.
No, I think that's a great way to kind of analyze it, Bart, and I appreciate the call. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved with the most impressive part. What kind of brought them back in that game? Because I do think that needs to be a focal point as to how they can avoid the slow start, right? The dreaded slow start, the 24-9 at halftime that the Titans had, letting Arizona run roughshod on you in the first half and doing yourself a disservice. Now, things spiraled out of control in a different way in Arizona than they did in Seattle, but my point is well taken, I would imagine, that how can you play that complimentary game, not just in the second half, but for four quarters? as I believe Bill was the caller earlier, kind of outlined. How can you put together a more complete performance?
But the most impressive part of it, too, even with the slow start, is being able to crawl out of a hole with the run game as a focal point. Like, how many teams in the NFL are capable of doing that? The Titans had 41 rush yards as a team at halftime in Seattle. Derrick Henry finishes with 182. And they were down by two touchdowns at multiple points in that game.
Well, now, so here's the difference, because I think a lot of teams can do it in the second half. It's the way that the Titans do it that makes them different. The Titans are the only team trailing by 15 that sticks with the run.
Yeah.
Because of that, for that exact reason. It's why I was glad to see Todd Downing. You know, it's not my complaint with the Titans and their offense is not that they stick with the run too often. It's the predictability of how they stick with the run, where the first series in the last two games has been run, run, pass, three and out. That drives me crazy. But it's how you use, it's not just the players, it's the play calling. How do you call a complementary game to allow these guys to maximize their abilities? And I thought you saw a great example of what that can be in the second half against Seattle. You will need that against the Colts, because the Colts defense, and we'll spend some time on it later, they have lost to Nico Autry, and that has made a difference. But their outside linebackers are great. DeForest Buckner is spectacular. And this is going to be something that the Titans offensive line, it's going to be a difficult matchup them. And in fact, I think it is a more difficult matchup than the one Seattle posed. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved. What are your feelings on the matchups on the field between the Colts and the Titans? What do you think favors the Titans? What do you think works in favor of the Colts? I'd be curious to hear your response. And what do you believe to be the most impressive part of their performance against Seattle and how they can build upon it heading into this next home game at Nissan Stadium? By the way, speaking of home games at Nissan Stadium, I got a pair of tickets for you at 12:15. So stick around. I'll tell you how you can win them later on in the show. When we come back, we will continue this conversation, and I'll give you a stat about Ryan Tannehill that I think is going to blow your mind, especially if you're a Titans fan and one who has been a Titans fan for quite some time. I'll tell you what that is coming up next. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. So now that we're on camera for the entirety of the radio shows, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., Zone TV is what it's called, YouTube, Twitch, Facebook Live, Twitter. I feel, you know, there is something about eating on camera that I feel greatly self-conscious about. But, you know, it's a weird time to do a radio show. It's like I don't eat very early in the morning, but because we're on from 10 to 1, it's just this kind of, I don't want to eat during the show because, one, you know, I'm scared that I'll have something in my teeth on camera, or that you'll hear the fact that I have something in my throat from whatever I was shoveling down my face during the commercial break. But, you know, I caved today. I brought in Greek yogurt, and it's been pointed out to me that I'm eating on camera. Thank you very much, Zone TV. So I'd like to put it on a poll, Lucas, because this is my great conundrum today. And I'll give you the one Ryan Tannehill stat that I think is going to surprise you here in just a second, as we mentioned. But I don't like bringing my own silverware into work because I fear that, one, I'll accidentally throw it away or I'll leave it somewhere, and then all of a sudden I have a shortage of spoons in my household. I just don't want to go through the hassle, right? So I was hoping that there would be plastic silverware at the station. Now this is a risky play. Because there was about a 2-week period when we didn't even have coffee cups. Okay. So I did find break room utensils, but they are not plastic. Like they're metal. And so I would like to know whether you can trust break room utensils during a global pandemic. At Buck Rising is where you can vote on the polls, because it's, you know, I'm running some risk here, not only eating on camera, but by using a break room utensil, and God knows how long it's been down there, but I'm desperate and I'm hungry. So it had to be done. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved over the course of the show. So I saw a stat from Jim Wyatt, the great one, of TennesseeTitans.com yesterday. Ryan Tannehill recorded his 23rd career game-winning drive in the win over Seattle. Now, this is not the stat that I think is going to surprise you. So Ryan Tannehill recorded his 23rd career game-winning drive in the win over Seattle. It was his 10th game-winning drive since joining the Titans in 2019, which leads all NFL quarterbacks during the past three seasons. Now, that's not the stat that's going to surprise you, but it's still a good one. So it does speak to what Lucas brought up earlier, which is, yeah, how many teams do you know that can come back and win the way that the Titans can? And this is consistent at this point, right? 10 is enough of a sample size to say 10 times Ryan Tannehill has been trailing in a game, and 10 times, well, it's more than 10 times, but at least in 10 of those moments, he has been able to bring his team back to victory, more so than any other quarterback in football since he took over the starting role here. That's impressive. Now, what I think makes it more interesting is who he has more game-winning drives than that have played for this franchise. I producer Reed, who works with me on the A to Z Sports Primetime show, which will be at halftime tonight of Thursday Night Football. For those of you who watch primetime as well as listen to the radio show, you're more than welcome to join in the fun. But producer Reed brought this up to me last night, and he went full first take on me. This was an incredibly embraced debate topic. He said, "Do you know how many game-winning drives Ryan Tannehill has?" And I said, 23. I just saw Jim Wyatt's tweet. And he said, "Do you know how many game-winning drives Steve McNair has?" And I said, "You know, I don't off the top of my head. How many?" From 1995 to 2007, McNair's career with two teams, of course, the Titans and then technically the Oilers and the Titans, and then the forgettable end with the Ravens. Steve McNair has 21 game-winning drives to Ryan Tannehill's career 23. So producer Reed asked me, well, who would you rather have in a game-winning drive moment, Ryan Tannehill or Steve McNair? And I said, are you out of your mind? Who are you? Are you Max Kellerman?
Trying to light the world on fire.
Are you Stephen A. Smith? What are you trying to do to me? Do you understand what will happen if I put I can hear people picking up their phones in outrage to call us now, even that I've spoken that question into existence. Because no matter what it is, no matter whether the statistics are more impressive, whether the accomplishments are more impressive, and I'm not downplaying Steve McNair. Everybody count to 10, 10 deep breaths or 20 short ones, whichever works better for your breathing pattern. I'm not saying that Ryan Tannehill is better than Steve McNair. Steve McNair is a co-MVP of the NFL. Ryan Tannehill has had a really, really good three-year streak because he didn't start the entirety of 2019. But you know what I'm saying. Ryan Tannehill's been really, really good in the last couple of years. But I do think it's interesting to look at those two teams and see how McNair would come back in games and how Ryan Tannehill's Titans would come back in games. Because I think in the same way that we're talking about Derrick Henry, I also think of Steve in that same light, where he would will his teams through injury, through adverse circumstances, through weather, through brutality by the Ravens or the Steelers or whomever they were playing, the New York Giants in one of the more famous comebacks to win it. Steve McNair had that, no pun intended, air about him. And Ryan Tannehill, it feels like a different conversation, doesn't it? Like, it almost feels like you should be attributing the game-winning drives as much to Derrick Henry as you are to Ryan Tannehill. And that's not to discredit Tannehill. It's just that the team is built differently. So I think that's a curious conversation. I wonder if that surprises people to know that Ryan Tannehill has more game-winning drives than Steve McNair did. Does that surprise you?
A little bit, yeah. Because that was Steve's whole thing. Even at Steve's worst, and his worst performances during the game, his best came out on that game-winning drive. And Blaine Bishop's talked about it all the time. They'd be on the sidelines like, hey, what's going on, man? You okay? And he was always, I got it.
That's what I'm saying.
And like, he would pull it out in the end.
Because Mike Otto says this on YouTube, I feel like game-winning drives is a misleading stat. In order to be a game-winning drive, your team has to be down. I'd prefer to be up at the end of the game and not need a game-winning drive. Well, he's looking at that differently. I'm just saying, to credit them to the quarterback, yes, the quarterback is the most important player on the offense. No matter what the team is, no matter if this is the Tennessee Titans or otherwise, if you guys want to jump in, 615-737-1045, you're welcome to do so. Andy Wright says Tannehill, Henry, Brown slash Jones, greater than McNair, George, Dr. Dyson, or Mason. And I, again, I'm not trying to turn this into first take. That's really not my intention at all. But I did find that interesting to see the way that they credited the game-winning drives and to kind of look at the different ways that these two players did it. Because McNair was somebody that was the will to win. It's not like Eddie didn't have those moments too, but Derek has more of them that you associate solely to Derek than you did solely to Eddie George. You looked at McNair as much as you did Eddie George in those moments. 615-737-1045. Chase is in White House. He wants to weigh in. What's up, Chase?
Yeah, man, just kind of wanted to touch on that, what you were just talking about with Tannehill and McNair. Coming from a huge McNair fan, honestly, like, I kind of think a little bit of it has to look at the defense and how often you get a chance to come back in the fourth quarter. When back on those teams back in the early 2000s, our defense was stiff.
Right.
A lot of times we were ahead going into the fourth quarter, so there was no comeback.
No, it's a great point. Again, this is the comparison is an interesting one, but it's not necessarily a parallel, right? Because the teams were constructed differently. Here, right now, in the last, since I'd say the second half of 2020, because the Titans defense at the start of 2020 had to play lights out because Marcus Mariota couldn't do anything. The offense was constipated. It was difficult to get anything done without a defense that was giving up an average of 20 points per game. They were stout. They were incredible. During that early, five-game stretch? I think Ryan Tannehill's first game was week six. Week seven, because week six was that god-awful Denver game.
Well, they were 2-4 when he took over, right?
That is correct. So that would have been week six. That was the worst game of my professional football viewing and commentating life. That was Denver 16-0, Joe Flacco at the helm. It was so bad. You want to talk about things that give you PTSD that keep you up at night? The most interesting thing from that game was the team photographer chasing around this pigeon that was hovering around everybody on the field. It was a really, really, it was a dreadful outing. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved. The defense now is the issue, whereas the defense then was the greater strength. It was not the offense that necessarily overwhelmed you. They had some offensive players that were capable of making these kind of plays. But Titans defense, Titans teams were constructed to suffocate you with good defense and run the ball, control the clock, and not need the game-winning comebacks, as Chase just pointed out. We'll come back. We'll continue this conversation on the other side. I'll tell you something that I observed on film watching this game back last night that really stood out to me on the defensive side of the ball, and it's going to make Titans fans feel really good because I think this Seattle game was one of the best Jeffrey Simmons outings that I've seen yet. And I'll tell you why it was critical to what the Titans did to be able to win that game. Harold Landry will join us at 11:15, so make sure you're sticking around for that. I got Titans tickets for you at 12:15 and Coach Rick Venturi to break down the Colts in great detail at 12:20. Stick around. Your call's next as well. I'm Buck Rising, 104.5 The Zone.